Paying rent can feel like throwing money away. And when you're spending so much, it can be hard to see yourself buying a home. So Rocket Mortgage is helping you put your monthly rent towards home ownership with Rent Rewards. For the first time, save up to $5,000 off the cost of your first home just by paying rent. Only at Rocket Mortgage. Call 800-4-ROCKET or visit rocket.com to find out more.
Rocket Mortgage, LLC. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
And it's the Pat Kenny Show with Anton in for Pat. Today is National Cerebral Palsy Day. There are 12,500 people, roughly, in Ireland who live with cerebral palsy. It is the most common lifelong physical disability. Julie Welford was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, but her mother, Nicola, ended up having to opt for private physiotherapy and specialised treatment in the UK because of the decline of services in Ireland. And Nicola joins me in studio along with Rachel Byrne, Executive Director of the Cerebral Palsy Foundation. You are both very welcome. Maybe, Nicola, we might start with you and Julie's story, because it was at about 6 months of age where you thought something might be up.
Hi, Anton. Yes, Julie was born a perfect baby and we were delighted to have her. We had a boy and we had a girl. So we had what everyone would have called a gentleman's family. And as she started to get bigger, she was 6 months of age and we just noticed that she just wasn't meeting her milestones from a physical perspective. So she wasn't sitting up in her high chair properly. So when it came to feeding her for solids, she kept kind of falling over and she wasn't grabbing her toys on the playmat like her brother would have done. So I suppose because she was my second child, I was aware of the signs, what to watch out for. And I just realised something must be going on. For a while at the beginning, you'd be making excuses. You'd be saying, oh, girls are different to boys. And maybe I'm carrying her too much and she needs to exercise her muscles better. But then I just realised, look, we need to get a referral. We need to get the developmental check done. And we sought a referral then to a paediatrician as well. So that's when we started the journey of discovery.
And how long is it before you get a diagnosis and something like that? Is it a relatively quick process?
We still don't actually have a formal diagnosis. So on paper, Julie has quadriplegic cerebral palsy. So you need to have a diagnosis on paper to be able to access services in the country. But we still don't have a formal diagnosis for Julie. So she presents with cerebral palsy, as many children do in this country. They could have lots of different things going on or lots of different, you know, diagnosis or genetic conditions, which causes a cerebral palsy then in the child.
What impact did it have on you when you discovered that, whatever about not having a totally specific diagnosis, you were in the cerebral palsy area?
I suppose it was just getting familiar with what it was. So like we would have heard the term and I was aware of it, but just understanding what it was and what impact that would have on our child. And I suppose because at that stage we were dealing with a baby, so she still looked regular. She still looked what we call normal, if we're allowed to use that word. And she just seemed perfect. And it was just as she progressed then physically, we started to discover her challenges. And, you know, we didn't know those challenges even until today. You know, she's 10 years of age now. It was at least until she was age three before we realised what we were being presented with Julie in relation to what her physical abilities were going to be for her future.
Do you catastrophise? Because normally when parents of a young child get, when the child has any issue, you always take it to the logical extreme of what this might be. Did you spend a lot of time worrying about what our future might hold?
Yeah, you'd be trying not to think too much about it, because if you think too much about it, you'd literally go under. But you are trying to prepare yourself for that too, because you want to give her the best opportunities. And also psychologically, you're trying to prepare yourself for what that future might be. So I remember one of the first things that we were told by her neurologist was that she more than likely may not speak. And at this age, she was only 9, 10 months of age. So again, she was a baby. No babies talk at that age. But to be visualising a future, you know, of a little girl who maybe won't talk was really difficult to digest and really difficult to visualise. And we do have a nonverbal child, you know, but she communicates in so many other ways now through assistive technology.
What's her current physical condition, and what has it meant for you as a family and for the environment in which you live?
So she has achieved independent mobility through a power chair. So I tell everybody she's a driver. She started to drive last January, and she's really good at navigating out and about at home, in school and everywhere. But it took a long time for her to learn that skill and we didn't know if she would achieve that. So it's probably the only thing she can do independently for herself. And other than that, then she needs 24-hour care. So we feed her, we change her, we dress her, we get her ready for school. So she can't do anything physically independent for herself. She has an eye gaze computer to communicate with, and she's starting to use her hands with that device place now. So we're looking at dual user function on that. She's very bright, very intelligent. She gets the highest grades in her class in mainstream school. And she loves school and loves her friends. So she's doing really well. You know, we've optimised on the potential for Julie, but it hasn't been easy. We've had to work so hard at it. And she's had to work really hard too.
What is it? What impact has it had on your life personally? Because it is a hell of an achievement to get the kind of academic results that you're describing. I assume that comes after an awful lot of parental effort.
It does. And it's a team effort, you know. So she has a fantastic SNA, Dawn Kenny, in Bohur National School down in Ballina, Killaloe. And we have a great school, Bohur National School. Una Kennedy was the principal at the time. And she left no stone unturned to make sure that Julie attended her local school and did everything she could to support us on her journey in school. And, you know, Dawn has been a wonderful sidekick. We've worked together as a team and her teachers. I personally attended junior infants for weeks on end. So I sat at the back of the class on the baby chairs and I learned it all over again because I had to, you know, but I was allowed to. I was enabled to do that. And we worked as a team. We did.
How was your colouring? It's good.
Yeah, I'm an art teacher, so.
Oh, well, you're cheating in that phase.
Yeah.
Do you have a sense then, or rather, give me a sense of what the national supports have been? Because this is something that Rachel will be able to give us a bit of an understanding of, the sort of the policy and supports for the 12,000 and something people who have cerebral palsy. Was there much in the way of national supports you could access?
So in the early days, we were referred to our local CDNT, which is a Children's Disability Network team. And, you know, the T in CDNT is really important because you are very much part of a team and you'd have a multidisciplinary, you know, support with regards to SLT, physio, OT, psychology if you needed. We didn't need to avail of that resource. Things were much better back then. And I'm talking about, you know, 9 years ago. We did have good support. We had to, Julie.
They were better 9 years ago?
Yeah. Julie couldn't be left. She had to be supported. And, you know, we did have good intervention in the early days. We didn't know any difference. So to us, it was reasonably good. Things have definitely deteriorated. There's a serious lack of therapists in the CDNT network. I think also as well for a child with cerebral palsy, it's quite a specific condition and it requires those specialist services. And sometimes therapists in your local team aren't always able to meet your child's needs. So we would link in under the Central Remedial Clinic in Clontarf as well. And we would be lost without their services because they have that extra expertise, which we need. But we need more of them in the country. We need more therapists in the country. And we need therapists to apply for the roles that are available in the HSE. We want them to go for those jobs. We know it's hard there at the moment and we know it's tough. But, you know, to please apply for the positions that are available so that we can support the CDNT network and support the CRC so that people like me and my child can feel the impact of that service on the ground.
Well, Rachel, maybe you might come in at this point. Rachel Byrne, Executive Director of the Cerebral Palsy Foundation. How representative is the experience that Nicola has outlined there?
Very representative, I suppose. You know, we've actually have a landmark survey that we've launched today that has over 400 families that are saying the same sorts of things. So, you know, the priority of going, we're not getting regular services, whether it be for therapy or other different interventions, that wait lists are long. And really what we need to have is the right care at the right time throughout the lifespan. Nicola spoke about, you know, early diagnosis and what that looks like. We launched a program here 2 years ago looking at early detection intervention. And before that, children were not getting diagnosed before the age of 12 months. Whereas we know not only should they be getting diagnosed, but they can get diagnosed. And that support for the family in those moments, you know, you talked about, like, what does it feel like to get a diagnosis? It's not just about what you do or the assessments you do that tell you that your child potentially has cerebral palsy. It's how it's delivered. And all those things are so important. And now, actually, excitingly to say, the former major maternity hospitals have actually now, as part of standard of care through our program, are diagnosing children on average around 7.5 months of age. And so that makes a huge difference. And then if we think about...
Now, does it make a huge difference to the parents or does it make a huge difference to the child's prognosis?
Both. So obviously, if you can get an early diagnosis, you can start thinking about early interventions. We know that neuroplasticity, there is the most opportune time before a child is the age of 3. And so that's when you really want to think about intensive different interventions. Throughout their lifespan, though, we really need to make sure that we're delivering different types of care, whether that be therapies, whether it be surgeries. And they're different things that we really need to make sure are offered to families at the right time.
And in what sort of instance would surgical intervention be needed?
Yeah, so orthopaedic surgery is actually pretty common for children with cerebral palsy. There's four different types in broad sense of the scheme. So it could be hip surgery. So children with cerebral palsy, particularly those that are not walking, have a greater risk of hip dislocation. And we know actually because of global studies and global work that you can prevent that dislocation from happening. And that's important because hips that are dislocated are painful and very, very uncomfortable. The other piece is actually gait correction surgery. So there is a type of surgery called selective event multi-level surgery, which means that there are multiple surgeries done in the same operation. And they could be done at the hip, the knee, and the ankle. And that's something that really isn't offered here yet. That's something that, as part of our program, that we're really
those
going
are to
be.
Preemptively stabilize the joints. Is that what
yeah?
It is?
So if you're thinking about how muscle tone impacts different joints, it impacts how a child will walk or potentially move, and that's what you're actually trying to correct.
There was one of the things that Nicola said there about the things being better 9 years ago. I think we sort of have an assumption that given the economic shifts that have happened over that decade, things in almost every part of delivery should be better rather than being worse. Why has there been that diminution in service, and what has it meant for patients?
Yeah, sure. I think with any change in systems, and obviously with the introduction of progressing disability services, and obviously the model of care that's been introduced, individuals with cerebral palsy actually don't fit that model perfectly because there is acute needs that are required. So whether it be surgical needs, therapy needs, and then there are, yes, obviously your educational needs as well. And it's just not the model where they fit into well.
And are you hoping that that will change? Have you any indication that it might?
Yeah, absolutely. So when we're looking at what could be a national cerebral palsy program of excellence, and that's what we're hoping to actually achieve, all of these things are possible. There are guidelines and models that we can follow that have occurred internationally, and the clinicians and researchers, and most importantly, families, are 100% on board to actually make this happen.
Interesting text where you're talking about early diagnosis. My daughter has cerebral palsy. I knew something was wrong at 6 months. Despite this, she passed her 18-month HSE developmental check. I insisted on another follow-up. She was diagnosed with CP at 24 months old. There are several flags, and the texter suggests, such as being left-handed or right-handed before 18 months and so far, that could give an early diagnosis. Handedness matters before that
absolutely.
Age.
So there's sort of six signs. One of them is handedness before 6 months of age. One of them is looking at head control and the ability to sit as well. And then sometimes you're looking at stiffness in the muscles. But that's not an unusual story that just came through. Like the average age of diagnosis is usually after the age of two. A lot of it is the story of let's just wait and see. Let's wait and see how they go. But what we do know with cerebral palsy is that we have assessments and we have tools that can actually diagnose them far earlier.
One final thing, Nicola. What has Julie's journey been like in terms of understanding her own condition? Because if she's now 10, there must have been, you're of the age where she can come to understand that. How has she dealt with it?
She's a happy girl. I mean, once she has her friends, once she's out and about, you know, she's happy. She is aware of it. You know, she knows she's different, but she's also used to being with other children in wheelchairs too. And she's aware of that environment. So she mixes in both environments. But she's relatively happy. But as Rachel had mentioned, you know, children like Julie undergo an awful lot of pain and it's not always picked up. Like in particular with my daughter, she's nonverbal. And I really have to literally get inside her to understand how she might be feeling in a particular circumstance. So prior to her, she had a double hip osteotomy surgery 3 years ago. And prior to that surgery, she was just waking every hour on the hour. And I didn't know fully what was wrong, you know, just not fully sure. And she was in pain for years until she had that surgery. And it wasn't until after that surgery, after, you know, a long time of rehabilitation, about a year later, she started to sleep through the night. And like we're talking about a little girl that's now 7 going on 8, and also a family that have had no sleep for 8 years, you know. So that's hard going on everybody. And, you know,
and do you just have to train yourself to pick up on nonverbal cues and try to spot it?
Yeah. Now she has her communication device, but I suppose I'm her mom, so I know her inside out. But yeah, but you're also relying on other people to do that for her too. So when you do hand her over to somebody else, us. You're hoping that they'll have the same intuition too, because, you know, you really need to understand her to get how she might be feeling about a particular situation, or to preempt a particular situation too. And just going back to the care and the therapies with the PDS system as well, you know, we're getting care, but we're not getting consistent care. That's the problem. And, you know, and we're not getting it at the right time. And the consistency is the importance, and the right surgery at the right time is crucial for the outcome of children with CP, because if they don't get the care and if they don't get the surgery at the right time, they can end up living a very difficult life going forward, you know. And that could potentially mean not walking for their future. You know, if those surgeries, if that care isn't given at the right time, then their future might be to be immobile.
If people want to find out more, Cerebral Palsy Foundation?
Yes, absolutely. Cerebralpalsyfoundation.org.
And to go green today for CP.
Yes, go green. And there's 30 buildings getting lit up across the country. So if you see a building lit up green, take a photo and hashtag
go green for CP. It's not for St. Patrick's Day.
Guys, thank you very much. That is Nicola Welford and Rachel Byrne. Rachel, the Executive Director of the Cerebral Palsy Foundation.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.